from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
G'day there, and welcome to the rewrap for Tuesday. All the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast in a sillier package. I am Glenn ZB, and this morning it's a motorsport special for all you motorheads out there, petrol heads. And then we're going to fix it all by going carbon neutral. And at the end, we'll discuss leaving gifts and how much is appropriate for a leaving gift, especially for a school principal. But yes, let's begin. This first guy is not really a petrol head, given that he drives Formula E.
What do you reckon is the future of Formula E?
I think the future is very bright. It's gaining a lot of traction at the moment. You got a lot of big OEM manufacturers coming in into the sports. The world's changing a lot, and especially in the automotive industry, which is now transferring across to motorsport. And, Formula E is the pinnacle of that at the moment, and they're sort of driving that technology
forward. Because that's the interesting part, isn't it? Because F1's the great dream, of course, for so many drivers. But for manufacturers, which is where you get your action and your traction and all of that, it's electronic for the future, isn't it? And that's where you're at. Yep. So that's why you got your Audis and your Jags and all of those sort of people in, because that's where they want to be, presumably.
Exactly, yeah. It's obviously a marketing thing for most of these brands, but also it's the technology transfer is very relevant in Formula E, where Formula One has sort of lost that. Mm. Formula One's all about, performance and in terms of downforce, ultimate speed, where Formula E is completely different, where racing in cities, city centers, iconic city centers around the world, and very, very, important to have that transfer of technology to the automotive industry with these big manufacturers.
And that's the interesting thing. And watching you in Hong Kong the other day, those cars don't stick on the road the way a Formula One car does. Because, a Formula One car doesn't move off the road, whereas you guys are all over the place.
Yeah, and there's a number of reasons for that. And that's because we run on a road tire. Street circuit, so the grip level is very low, no downforce, and the car's quite heavy because the batteries aren't, they're at this very early stage of development, so they're quite heavy at the moment.
Yeah, so if motorsport leaves you cold and you're not really interested, I'm afraid this is really, you've come to the wrong podcast today, because so that was Mitch Evans, of course. Next up, we had Earl Bamber. He knows how to drive for a very, very long time, very fast.
Le Mans. The endurance title, you would regard this surely as one of the great years.
I mean, I think to get both in the same year, it's absolutely incredible. First of all, also in the circumstances, the first amazing thing is we had two Kiwis in the car, with Brendan alongside me and Timo as well. So, amazing. And then the circumstances at Le Mans, going back to last place and then fighting all the way through. And then really having a stellar year the rest of the season, winning a lot of races. And, really, I would say almost a perfect year from the team side and our side. So I can't complain.
And so, of course, you're a finalist in the Helberg Awards. You must be stoked about that.
Yeah, very, very stoked about that. Finalist as a team. So that's cool. Actually, we haven't really looked at it too much. Brendan and myself, we were running around Europe a lot, and we more or less saw that we were nominated on Twitter. So hopefully we can go all right. Let's see.
How about the supercars next year? I mean, how's that come about? How exciting is that?
The supercars is really exciting. Actually, to go to do the Bathurst 1000 has been on my radar a long time, especially because after the success at Le Mans, I think I regard the Bathurst 1000, the next biggest race. As a kid, you grow up in New Zealand, in October on Sunday afternoon, watching the race. So, to have the chance to go there. And lucky enough, Porsche gave me permission early to look for a drive there. And then this year is the first time that the dates don't clash. So as soon as the dates didn't clash, I just text-message Shane van Gisbergen, because I've known him since go-karts we raced together, a little bit like Brendan and myself. And then it actually just went from there. It's really exciting to join him. I mean, he's one of the top blokes in the category. Some big shoes to fill, because hopefully at that point in the year, he's going to be fighting for the championship as well. Mm-hmm. But no, very, very excited to join it and to a completely new challenge.
Of course, much like the Mike Hosking Breakfast is the pinnacle of radio broadcasting in New Zealand, Formula One is, of course, the pinnacle of motorsport in the world. And we've got our own driver back in there, Brendan Hartley.
You're looking forward to a new engine that doesn't blow up next year?
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic about that. You know, a lot of people have asked me if they think that's going to be a worry for having the Honda, but I've heard a lot of positive things from all the people in the factory and all the people involved from the engine side. And it's a big opportunity for the team to be the sole supplier from Honda. And equally for me to be a part of that continued development process. So, I mean, in any case, it's an amazing opportunity for me to be in Formula One. But I think for the team going forward, it's a big opportunity for them. And obviously, a bit frustrating this season to have four races in a row where I had to start from the back of the grid. I think there's almost zero chance that will happen in Melbourne, considering that's the first race of the year.
Yeah, it must be hard work not knowing if your engine's actually going to keep going. Are they not servicing them regularly enough? Are they not doing every 10,000 Ks? What's going on there? There's me showing off my motorsport expertise. What I can tell you is that the government wants us to be carbon neutral. What does Mike think about this?
From our Jobs for Life file comes yesterday this announcement, I mentioned a moment ago on the program, of this interim climate change committee, which will eventually turn into a climate change commission, of course. And along with the Zero Carbon Act, we're all headed for a clean, green future. We're aiming for zero carbon by 2050. I'll be 85. Might still be alive. Of course, these ideas take time. This is big picture stuff. So if you view these things with a passion, you can quite rightly argue we need to set sail at a pace and start working as fast as we can because the track record up until now is not good. But in that lies the key. This, of course, is all Green Party policy. This is the Greens' price for being in coalition. It is genuinely backed by Labour. Not quite as vehemently, of course, but the broad goals are the result of a joint approach between the two parties. But the reason it's worth questioning is because none of it's going to happen. And you want to at least ask just how much energy and, of course, money we're wanting to spend on doing something that isn't actually going anywhere. As Emmanuel Macron said the other day at yet another one of those fossil fuel burning international gab fests in France, we are losing the battle on climate change, and he is 100% right. And he and everyone else who peddles it is losing badly. And this is not about whether climate change is real or whether it's real and the current global population is entirely responsible for it. It is the simple reality that whatever your view, globally there isn't enough desire or weight to actually do something about it. Because the simple truth is, even if you buy into carbon reduction and low emissions, it comes at a price. It comes at a price that governments all over the world simply aren't prepared to pay. And we know this to be true because of the Kyoto Protocol. Lot of noise, no action. The Paris Accord, lot of noise, no action. If goodwill and hot air and earnestness reduced carbon, the problem would have been sorted by now. But the actual answer, the real answer, the loss of jobs, the destruction of industries required, is simply too high a price to pay for most governments. James Shaw, I have no doubt, is passionate about this committee come commission being different. But come back to me in 5 years, 10 years, 20, 30, pick whatever one you want, and let's see what's actually happened versus who just sat on a well-paid government committee writing reports.
So if you get kicked off that committee or you decide to leave it, is there some kind of leaving gift? How big is it? Is it the same as, I don't know, the school principal who got $10,000? That sounds all right to me. It might even be worth leaving if I got something that good.
Mike, $10,000 sounds a lot, but that's less than $500 per year for that principal. I think it's reasonable. I actually tend to agree with you, but, you know, what do I know? It's based on the school community. Some of those, that probably wasn't the best example.
So I've been working for this company for about 22 years now.
No. You're making the classic
mistake.
So
if I leave...
No, turning up does not equate to quality. Just being here... This guy.
You're right. When I said I've been working, I sort of did the air quotes.
Yeah, exactly. Thing. Exactly. Just being here is not the same thing as turning a school around. So if you're happy, if the board's happy, the school community's happy, and everyone goes, this is a great bloke who did something transformational for our school and we're forever indebted and grateful, then what's the problem with that? The 250 kids or people to Rarotonga for no educational benefit, you've got to start asking things around that. But my major problem with the story is, of course, like so many things in this life, we focus on the negative immediately. And you've got to remember how many thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of schools there are. And the real story was they're all getting on fine. They're just, they had an audit, had a look, and everyone got a tick bar, a small, small dysfunctional handful who have got major problems, and inevitably in a very large group of people, you're always going to have that, and hopefully they get the help they need. And within that group, you've got a few of the scurrilous operators who might be spending money in an area. I mean, that Fijian one seems highly suspect, that if you raise money, for, if not fraudulent, if you raise money for a specific cause, IG fee and Fijian disaster relief, and you spend it on something else, then that's fundamentally wrong. But if you say to a principal, look, you've done brilliant for us and thank you very much for that, we're indebted, then I don't see anything wrong. And everyone agrees, I don't see anything wrong with the... anything wrong with a generous gift.
So on the basis that they've completely... Changed it around.
Yeah, and made it better.
Well, so I still argue.
It's like the Adrian Orr argument. Adrian Orr got $1 million, and what did I say? He's added X number of $1 billion to the overall pot. So he makes billions to get $1 million. Good on him.
Okay, so I still argue that I have had a dramatic effect on this station. It's not necessarily a positive one.
Yeah. Well, then, so maybe, then we'd take money off. We'd say, well, if you'd done brilliantly, we'll give you 10
like,
grand.
An incentive to leave.
I think they call that redundancy. The old DCM don't come Monday.
Yeah, I'm not completely ruling it out. Let's talk. We could come to terms. I am Glenn ZB. I may have spoken too soon. That was the rewrap for Tuesday. I won't be coming Monday because it's holidays. But I will be back here again with more tomorrow on Wednesday. See you then.